productivity is defined as achieving or producing a significant amount or result. Producing significant amounts and achieving big results is what you're after, right? That's why I invited the productivity pro, Laura Stack, to share her best ideas on the subject. For nearly 20 years, Laura has consulted with Fortune 500 companies such as Starbucks, Walmart, IBM, GM, Time Warner, and more. Laura is also the best-selling author of 4 books, including her latest, Super Competent, The 6 Keys to Perform Your Productive Best. Laura, welcome to Success. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Darren. Pleasure to be here.
All right, well, let's start our discussion by talking about the productivity traps, those things that keep us busy but have us unproductive, ultimately. Give us 2 or 3 specific things that seem to have the greatest negative impact on our productivity.
Well, you know, if I have to just kind of look back in the 20 years almost that I've been doing this, there really have been some key things that have stuck out for me that we've evolved into, kind of the environment and the world of work, if you will, that have changed how we interact with our tasks and the nature of it. And sociology is a great field of study from which to draw, and I'm fascinated by that, by psychology, by neurology, and look at how these elements impact our productivity. One is what I've coined the depression mentality. When I talk to a lot of workers or attendees of my seminars or wherever I happen to meet people, they describe this phenomenon of their parents having said things to them or their grandparents like waste not, want not, everything has value, don't throw anything away, eat everything on your plate because the poor children in China are starving. And we grow up with these messages being drummed into our heads of our mothers washing Ziploc bags and saving tinfoil and wrapping paper. And those messages, which were very appropriate for that era, now fast forward into the information age where we literally have everything available at our fingertips, I think we now have created a society of pack rats where people have a very hard time throwing anything away. So what happens, you know, what was supposed to happen to the paperless office? Well, it can't work if people are still hitting print on their email. You know, there's still piles of paper everywhere. We now, you know, we're afraid to delete things because, you know, we never know when I might want that. So this kind of thinking, I think, pervades people in the workforce today, and that impacts our productivity negatively. There's also one that I've coined, obsessive-compulsive technology disorder, and really just this generalized lack of focus, I think, on things that are of critical importance and projects that would produce great results. You know, most people don't go into their email settings and know how to turn off the alerts, for example. So for every email they get, you know, play a sound, change the mouse cursor, put an envelope in the system tray, put up a desktop alert. Really? Do we need 4 alerts for 1 email? So if you ask yourself, out of every 10 emails I get, how many of them are really important? The answer, of course, is very few. So the majority of incoming email, for example, is very unimportant. But because we're getting an email every 4 minutes, and if it takes the average adult 7 minutes to ramp up into a state of concentration, this is how you get to the end of the day and you go, oh my gosh, I got nothing done. You can absolutely sit in your inbox all day. So this generalized lack of focus, you truly cannot get the space and the frame of mind in order to get some things accomplished. So in general, those would be some things I would say that are negatively impacting productivity.
So what I have here in my notes, Laura, is 1, depression era thinking. And then 2, OCD, obsessive compulsive distraction. So let's start with depression era thinking, because I agree. And it's fascinating that you sort of identify it that way, because much of the description that you gave, I was like, yeah, that's my wife's parents are still doing that kind of thing.
Is
so,
that right?
Yeah. So talk to us about how to uproot this depression era thinking from our habit patterns.
Well, so many things are just not important. And I think part of what we have to do is acknowledge that most of the things that we come across in the grand scheme of things in a day just aren't going to matter. You know, we have to get really clear about why do I need this? You know, everybody always asks the question, well, can I throw this away? Can I get rid of this? Instead of saying, why do I need this? And so a piece of it, Darren, has to do with your system. You know, it has to do with the way that you process information. You know, do you know how to touch things and deal with it? If you don't know where to put it, then it's going to end up on your desk. So what happens is that people end up creating kind of a chronological order, so to speak, on their desks. And, you know, when people show me their systems sometimes when I'm coaching them, I just try not to laugh. But it's so true that, you know, visually, you know, paper in the upper right-hand corner means something different than if it's in the lower left-hand corner. And we are trying very hard to use cues to help our poor little brains know when to do different things. So a piece of it that's kind of systemic is just having that foundation in place so that you don't have to think about things and know, you know, automatically where it is. So you don't have to keep it out in front of you in order to see it. So if you go into someone's office and, quote, clean them up, some people will have a heart attack, you know, because now they can't, quote, find anything. And so that is symptomatic of a bigger problem. So sometimes you have to kind of look underneath the source of where a lot of this clutter is being created.
You know, I'll tell you one thing that I do, and I do this with files and I do this with clothes, is that if I think, you know, I really like this, but I'm not really wearing it, because you tend to go to the same things that you're always familiar with going to and what you're comfortable with, right?
So, your favorites.
Yeah, when it comes to a document that I was like, you know, I might need this. You know, there's a chance that I might need this, and that might ends up creating this massive amount of backlog of crud, right? So I always take those things that I'm not really sure of, and I separate it out and put it into a six-month hold bin. And if I don't go looking for it in 6 months, I take the entire bin and just throw it out without looking. It relieves that psychic fear. Like, I could at some point, if the world comes close to an end, I might need this document.
Well, and you can use your recycle bin. If you have a systematic way of moving things from an idea to a working project to a reference file to an archive file, it's fine. It's just not in your immediate vicinity. I mean, I know one woman who had 20 years of documents in her office simply because she didn't go through and do an annual purge. I mean, you could do that with anything, what you're suggesting. My dad is a retired colonel. I grew up in the military and moved over and over and over. I mean, that's part of my story, why I became so organized in my life. And, you know, he would just keep putting moving stickers on the top of boxes and moving it to the next house. And I would just say, Dad, just put that out at the curb. You know, you haven't opened that box in 7 years. You know, he said, well, you never know when I might need it again. And he knew nothing in there was valuable, right, Darren? I mean, it really is going to come down to that self-discipline if you can actually follow through.
Yeah, and I agree. So let's go to number two, the OCD, the obsessive compulsive distractions. How does somebody sort of insulate themselves and create a performance strategy to not have this constantly tugged and pulled on sort of orientation we have with our society and culture? How can they sort of cut the tethers to a lot of these distractions so they can stay focused, as you suggested, and thus operate at higher productivity?
Well, you know, there are extremes of this and different ways that you can do it, from very simple things to very elaborate systems. I mean, I've had some clients who tell me that they put on an out-of-office alert that says, I answer email at 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 3 o'clock. And if you need me before then, call, you know, and that they have really limited themselves to only opening their email 3 times a day. I mean, you have some people who are very structured like that. Other people just say, oh, gosh, I'm in sales. That's not me. I need to be responsive, you know. So perhaps for you, you can create a rule that says every time I get an email from client ABC, play a sound. So you can be focused on doing something else of higher importance, but you know that if that client emails you, you can be immediately available. So, you know, it really runs the gamut of what we need to do to avoid distraction. I know a lot of people just say they hide, you know, they go to their Starbucks or the library or an empty conference room or an office where if they really need 90 minutes to get something cranked out and give it some serious thought, that they just go away from the distraction. I know myself, you know, I write a book about every 2 years now, I've averaged, and I can't write in my office. And I work at home, and I have 3 kids. My boys are 9, 11, my daughter's 15. No way am I actually going to be able to work. It's too distracting. So to avoid that OCD and all of the things going on, I check myself into a hotel every quarter. I check in on a Friday. I write all weekend, no email, no distractions. weekends, absolutely zone out and just write until Sunday and check out. And a few of those quarterly retreats and a draft of the book gets cranked out. So you have to understand your patterns and your behaviors and what you'll tend to default to when you're bored. Are you going to check your Facebook? Well, you might have to just shut down your entire Internet Explorer. What can you create that's the cone of silence for yourself? So setting your phone to do not disturb, you know, forwarding it to your voicemail, turning off your BlackBerry, your iPhone, your Droid, not just setting it to stun or to vibrate, because then you still look at it. You know, turning off your email alerts, whatever you have to do for yourself. And so you have to really understand your personal patterns within there, because the answers are going to be all over the place for that one.
Yeah. And I think distraction actually is addictive, and it gives people the ability to hide from harder, but far more creative and productive work.
Sure.
And so people go around all day feeling very busy, but ultimately they are not very productive. So distraction actually, I think, is a sedative and is a way that people can hide from doing real work.
Well, and also to help them feel complete, to feel successful. You know, when we have in our nature this desire to be productive, to contribute, to be successful. And, you know, we want to accomplish and we want to do. And we're faced with so many things that we could choose. We, you know, when we get something done, you get literally a little dopamine squirt, a little like, ooh, good job. I'm so productive. Did you see what I did? And we're driven to accomplish things. And I think it's symptomatic of work never being done, ever, never. I mean, I don't know anyone who's ever finished. I mean, have you ever left your office, Darren, and you're like, I'm done.
Yeah, no, it's impossible.
I finished.
Yeah.
No, we don't ever finish. So when we get a little thing done, there's a little victory and we have a little mini celebration in our minds and woo, did you see me? And so we're programmed that way. And so we just want to check, 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 check. And at the end of the day, wow, did you see how many things I got done? But you still have that nagging sense of dissatisfaction because, of course, the one thing you didn't do is the thing you've been putting off for 2 weeks, you know, that will really have a significant impact on your sales or your business or your results. So I think that it's normal. It's understandable when you look at just the human psyche and our need to achieve and to complete, that it feels good to get things done. And you're right, that can often detract from those high result projects that have a real return on investment. And so that's the key for me in personal productivity is figuring out how do I get the maximum results, but do it in the minimum amount of time. Because what I don't want to be doing is working 60, 70, 80 hour a week. So I can get a lot done if I put all that time in, right?
Right.
So I think that that's, you know, it's a piece of it is just this lack of completion in general.
Yeah. And people like to look busy, and some people make a career out of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can probably think of someone right now that looks incredibly busy and you know they're getting nothing done.
Exactly, yeah. So let's expand our discussion on solutions that make us our own productivity pros. So in your latest book, you give 6 keys to help people perform at their productive best. Let's go through them. The first one is activity. So explain this one more in depth for us.
So super competent, I went through and I said, what is it fundamentally about the behaviors that separate competent people, what I call simply competent, from the super competent? And I found kind of 6 keys or characteristics, if you will, about those people. And so if you get a competent grade in school, for example, you get a C. If you get a super competent grade, you get an A. So I named all of the factors, words beginning with A. So little hokey, but hopefully memorable. So this first one, activity. Super competent people really know exactly what they're supposed to be working on. They know that right this minute, I am doing exactly what I need to be doing in order to move me forward in my goals. So they are driven by an intense focus on priorities, and they have a clear sense of direction. So what they value determines their priority, and their priority determines their goals, and their goals determine their activities. So that's what activity means. Do you have your goals in place? Do you have a performance plan? When you sit down in the morning to get to work, do you know what the most critical thing is for you to work on? So super competent people under activity know exactly what they should be doing.
Okay, so Laura, the second key that you outline in your book, Super Competent, is availability. So give us your best strategies for controlling and, more importantly, protecting our time.
Yeah, availability has to do with that control over your schedule. You know, once you know what you need to work on, now you have to make time for it. And, you know, a lot of people say, I don't have time. Well, you're never going to get time. You have to make time. And we can't be available to everyone every day. So we have to learn how to control our own time and protect it. So most of us, in order to get time to do some of these higher priority projects that are on one of our lists or that are on our mind's eye, you know, we need to block out time to actually work. And I think teams have to come up with some sort of mechanism like this, where if we're trying to control and protect our time, if you're saying, oh my gosh, I just need an hour, people, you know, to focus on getting this task done, some sort of signal that lets other people know that we would prefer not to be interrupted right now. And I think that's kind of become this weird cultural thing that, you know, I've got to have this open door to people all the time. And indeed, a lot of the doors don't even work anymore because you shut them and people just knock on them. So we have to get this into the open. We have to actually talk about this with our coworkers and our desire and our temps to protect our time so that we can have half a chance of creating this environment where we can focus on one of those key tools. So it's setting those personal boundaries for yourself, you know, and learning to say no creatively. Do you have a minute? Well, I want to talk with you about this, and I've got my back up against the wall on this project. Can I call you at 3 o'clock? You know, and actually creating an appointment with that person, but not taking on the interruption, so that you can keep focused. So a lot of different strategies for controlling your time and your availability.
So number three on the list is attention. Tell us how to refine our attention and tune out the unlimited number of distractions without buying soundproof headphones or throwing our computers out the window. I mean, what are some of your ideas about protecting our attention?
Well, that's the, you know, that's a really important key today. And you alluded to it just in this always on type of technology and all of the distractions that we've already mentioned. So, you know, once you know what you need to be working on and you've got a little block of time now where you've made yourself available and you're going to work on this task, now you have to be a master of focus and of concentration. And super competent people really purposefully develop their ability to pay attention to a task at hand and not only filter out the distractions that aren't related to their work, but I find the most important piece here is mental chatter, where you're trying to work on that project that's going to have a significant result for you, and all of a sudden your brain goes, hey, did you remember to call Mike about the meeting next week? And so we stop what we're doing and we go over and we make a phone call and then we go back and then we have to say, where was I? Oh yeah, I was working on this, and we start again. So this is sometimes called, you know, multitasking, switching, which is really just code for never getting any one thing done. I use the expression, when you think it, ink it. And that way you can keep your focus, you know, think of something to do, don't do it. Write it down or type it out, however you capture information, which means you have to have an information capture method, then go right back to what you're working on. Think of something, don't do it, capture it, go right back to what you're working on. Then your brain kind of frees itself from all of that mental clutter, at least for a while, and allows you to focus. So I think that self-talk is kind of our own worst enemy with the attention.
Yeah, I agree. And then this, I think the second worst thing is, you know, who's the puppet and who's the master? We spend most of our time on inbound communications, reacting, versus outbound, which is creating. You know, we're reacting and responding versus creating and producing.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So give us the fourth key to being our productive best.
Okay, so after you know what to work on, you've got a block of time, you sit down and you are paying attention to it. Now the fourth key is accessibility. How well can you access the information that you need to do that task? So super competent people are well organized and they have systems in place that will help them find what they want when they want it, and they can quickly locate the information that they need to support their activities. So if you can't put your hands on something in 30 seconds or less, you may need some fine-tuning in this particular area. So how well is your calendar organized, your tasks or your to-do list, your client communications, your research, things you find on the internet, your contacts, your memory list, I mean, on and on and on. If you don't have the appropriate repository or place to put different types of information, then you end up keeping it on your mind. And so people who keep everything on their mind in their mind and generally have a lot of clutter up there are always having things fall through the cracks or reminding themselves of things, or they wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning going, oh, you know, I forgot this, and they've got to get up and write something down or call their voicemail or email themselves or write. And there's all these crazy mechanisms that we have to try to organize our information. So that's the real key, is how quickly you can access needed information to actually complete that task.
So Laura, the fifth key you give is accountability, something I'm a big proponent of and I see a lot of times, unfortunately, too little of. So talk to us about the importance of having self-discipline and self-control.
Yes, accountability, I completely agree, is really where the rubber meets the road. And super competent people really possess that discipline. They know they need to waste time wasters. They strive for constant self-improvement. They don't blame other people when things go wrong. So that self-discipline, you know what you should be doing, which I think most people know. You figure out how to make time for it. That's not hard. You learn how to work with your mind so you can pay attention. You get yourself organized. These are all things you can do. But when it comes right down to it, it has to do with your choices and behaviors within how you use those new skills that you've created. It's being able to do what you know you need to do even when you don't feel like it. You know, there are so many things that we know need to get accomplished today, but oh boy, anything looks more exciting than that. I think I need to go to Starbucks, or I wonder what's in the vending machine, or, you know, we can manage to talk ourselves out of doing just about anything. So that accountability, that saying, I am going to practice self-control and actually do what I need to do versus what I want to do. Because if we allow our emotions to guide us and to choose what we feel like working on, 9 times out of 10, what we feel like working on is not necessarily what we should be working on. Ultimately, that's what it's going to come down to, is your choices day in and day out.
So, Laura, in your book, you write, attitude is your state of mind, the way you perceive the world around you. Tell us what things to avoid so we don't create our own barriers to a positive attitude, thus inhibit our ability to be more productive.
That's the final key. This is a great way to frame it. If you suddenly, Darren, you yourself, you had unlimited funds and you got to hire the perfect personal assistant for yourself to be your own concierge, how would you describe that person? And if you make a list of the things that you would find in this perfect person, and then go back and study that list, I'd really be interested in knowing which of those things were skills in terms of they had to be taught or learned, and then which things were attitudinal, you know? And it seems so cliche to say attitude, but truly when you look at two people who have the same knowledge, skills and abilities, and compare those two people, sure enough, it's the one that's got that great attitude who will always come out ahead. You know, are you getting the requisite skills and training that you need when you lack the ability? Do you have just this motivation, this drive, this can-do positivity You just make things happen. And we all know people like that. That's what we want to strive to be. Proactive, decisive, fast. So I think that, you know, that is always it's the last one, but it's definitely true in the high performers that I have seen and what seems to separate the simply competent from the super competent.
You've given a ton of great ideas on how to be more productive. And it can, on the other side of this conversation, listening to it can be a bit overwhelming, like life can be. So let's see if we can break down your ideas and suggestions for one, two, or three things that somebody could start doing today. So they turn off the interview and they've heard 100 ideas, but these are the three things I'm going to start implementing today that would have the greatest impact to them becoming more productive. What would those one, two, three things be?
Well, I would probably turn again to the six keys. Test yourself on some of these keys and really look at, where am I breaking down? What is it about my productivity? Because not everybody is going to need help in all of these areas. You know, when it really comes down to the action steps, first of all, you know, you need to understand very clearly, do I know exactly what I need to work on today? So making a list for today, that short hit list, not just this big list of everything under the sky that I need to be working on, instead of being paralyzed. So many people have so much to do, they literally do not know where to start. So that's the first key, you know, looking at, where am I being distracted? How do I need to protect my schedule so that you can have the availability that you need to do those things? Looking at your attention. Where am I distracting myself simply by talking to myself? So if you think it, ink it. Maybe you're going to work on not multitasking and actually working on your focus and your concentration, or maybe it's your accessibility. You know, looking at a good email system and saying, how am I going to process email more quickly? How am I going to use rules? How am I going to use templates, you know, and figuring out, what is it about where you're disorganized? Some people, it's just a matter of learning how to use their software packages more efficiently. So I would invite everyone to take that assessment, and that would hopefully give them some ideas about where their system might be falling apart.
Appreciate that, Laura. Well, thank you very much. And I can't wait to add some of your great ideas and insights into my productivity routine. I really appreciate you taking your time today to share all of them with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Laura Stack, for being with us here at Success.
Thank you, Darren. I appreciate being here. Thanks for having me.
Success Audio Series. Copyright Success Media. All rights reserved.